This is a research interest of mine, so this talk blends many of my interests together. This was something that I actually started last year. I was working with a company called Performix, which at the time had been recently bought by DoubleClick, which has now been bought by Google, but now it'll get spun off separately. They're a search optimization firm. So there are some examples, so I have to sort of hide the companies that sponsor them, but I'll get to that towards the end. What I'd like to do is talk about modeling consumer search for making online advertising decisions. I don't know your backgrounds. I don't know if anyone is working with a search engine firm. I will ask for a quick show of hands. Does anyone work for a search engine? No. All right, so then I presume that you're more interested on the other side of advertising, which is how do we get this to work better? The purpose of the talk today is to talk about online advertising. I decided that I would start with some general background about online advertising. It's actually a good point, historically speaking, because now we've been at this for 10, almost 15 years now. So it allows us to sort of reflect and think about how much that has happened over that time and potentially how much more change could happen in the coming years. The way that I see advertising happen right now, if you think about it, it's a very unnatural environment. I sit down at my computer, oftentimes it's at home or at work, and I type in a few keywords, three or four, that hopefully when I hit search, I come back and find what I'm looking for. It turns out that most people, when they go to purchase a product now, don't go directly to a retailer, they go to a search engine. If I'm purchasing a large product like an automobile, two-thirds of people will go and search for an automobile online before they will go to a store and purchase it, or in this case to an outlet, to the automobile company. So what I'd like to do is transition, talk some about search advertising. We're getting into a specific area that's grown rapidly. I just have to mention Google and just match up basically the main product that Google has is search advertising. I will then talk about one particular problem in search advertising, which is trying to figure out from a customer standpoint or from an advertiser standpoint, what should I advertise? How should I choose my keywords? How can I predict what response is going to look like? There are a couple different models. Again, my training is as a statistician, so I tend to work with large data sets, and the goal is to try to use our empirical knowledge to try to make these kinds of predictions. I'll end with some conclusions, and I'll also leave time at the end for questions. Although I would encourage you, if you have a question, I'm happy to take it as we proceed through. If it's a very thought-provoking, long question, I'll make sure that we've got time at the end. If it's a clarification, by all means, raise it as we proceed. So, industry background. What do we know about advertising? Well, it all started in 1994 when the first banner ad showed up. And at the time, this was actually fairly novel. This was a banner ad. Have you ever clicked your mouse right here? You will. That was an ad taken out by AT&T on Hotwired's website. So again, Hotwire has now morphed in many different ways, still out there in some form. But you look at that and it's sort of quaint. And surprisingly, banner ads are still with us. In fact, this dimension, 480 by 64, has also stayed with us. It's still a very popular dimension if you're going to choose ads. But how much have we learned over the course of these 14 years? Well, I think a lot. The form of advertising, the structures, everything has become more mature, but I can't say that it's at a point where it's going to plateau and it's never going to change. If anything, I still think it's a very unnatural experience to sort of sit down at your keyboard, type in those four keywords, what we're really looking for is more natural ways to advertise. At its heart, advertisement is trying to connect someone that has some information or a product with someone that's looking for that. Oftentimes we use this push model where we're generating thousands of messages and just aiming them, hopefully in a targeted manner, but oftentimes we don't do a very good job in targeting. Alright, so I have a map of what things have looked like over the last 15 years. It starts in 1994 with Hotwired in banner advertisements. Here's Netscape in 1995. There are some notable firms that started. Yahoo, eBay, Windows 95 comes out. We have DoubleClick that starts to offer targeted advertisements using user profiling, where you're going to go back and you're watching what people are doing and trying to target things better. P&G comes in 1996 and says to Yahoo, we are not going to pay just per impression anymore. We're only going to pay you if people click on an advertisement. So that had a big impact on the structure of the industry, because now if you go out, the predominant form of advertisement is not to pay per impression like you do in print publications, but it's someone has to take an action first. Sometimes it moves even beyond that. It's not CPC or click, you pay when you click, it's pay when an action is taken, if someone buys a product. All right, so again, Overture comes up with a new idea about advertising, which is that we should open up how much people are bidding. Up to that point, people were actually hesitant to reveal the fact that people were paying for ads, that some people thought this was very crass, that this was commercializing the web. Well, now it's hard to get away from the fact that ads are predominant, and many firms within the industry rely heavily on advertising to support their business. If you take advertising away from the internet right now, I think it would shrink rapidly. It relies heavily on search. Search is supported through advertising. How would we find things? How would we try to commercialize many of the activities or the information that comes across? All right, so by the 1999, we've got blogs that are coming out. And the thing to point out is there's a huge growth in the internet. So we've got the overall internet usage, which is the red line, and internet usage as a whole is pretty interesting. If you take a look at the growth, you see that it goes from practically zero to 160 million over this time span. There's really only one other product introduction that's ever had this rapid a penetration, which was black and white televisions in the United States. It took it about 8 or 9 years to reach 50% penetration of U.S. households. That's what the internet has achieved. If you think about other types of technology that were very innovative, telephone took 70 years to penetrate that same 50%. So again, I think there's a real phenomenal growth, and what that means for advertising is that it didn't take long for advertisers to catch up with the growth of the internet. They were slow initially, laggards, but then eventually you see that the growth rate surpassed the internet as a whole. There's this notable dip. Notice that the dip just sort of slows down around 2000, 2001 in terms of growth. And obviously that's the bubble burst of the internet. But what happens is the advertisers that were really pushing the growth at this stage were PetSmart, companies that spent lots of money on advertising, and that was their business model, to try to grow rapidly. They were essentially dot-com companies. They then died out fairly quickly by 2001, 2002 because they didn't have sustainable business models. But then all of a sudden, something very interesting has happened since the beginning of the decade, which is traditional Fortune 500 companies have now moved in, and they make up a large share of advertising. So by 2004, online advertising is larger than the entire outdoor advertising industry. It accounts for 80% of magazine advertisements, roughly it's half the size of the radio ad sector, and it's one of those rare industries where we continue to see double-digit growth. Even with the recession, or potentially a recession right now, we'll wait for an official assessment from the NBER, but what it looks like is that it seems that the growth that's happening will continue over the next few years. And these numbers are just for the U.S., but the worldwide numbers mirror it in terms of growth and penetration. Everything has just shifted over a little depending on what country you're looking at. So that puts us over here where we now have a fairly mature industry, a very important industry. And what we have to ask ourselves again is, well, how are we going to build up advertising? What is advertising going to mean? Are the next companies of the world going to be built up by word of mouth? Companies like Google and Starbucks, who have essentially eschewed traditional forms of advertising? Or is it going to be companies like Coke and McDonald's and Nike that spend lots of money on traditional forms of advertising? All right, so what I wanted to just give a brief idea of how the industry is changing and the importance of online advertising. So again, these are numbers from 2003. What you are looking at is advertising spending households and ad spending per household. So at this time, if you take a look, companies on average spend roughly $100 per household in promotions. They spend $97 billion in promotion spending. They spend $45 billion in advertising spender on newspapers. If you go down to the internet, online spending at this time is about $7 billion. By this last year, if we take a look at what spending is at, it's roughly $25 billion. And out of that $25 billion, Google is a huge percent. It's about 70%. Google had advertising revenues from AdWords, its main product in 2007, of, I believe, $16 billion, a little over $16 billion. The other thing that's happened that's notable is that sellers are experiencing incredible demand for certain industries. It's not a buyer's market, it's more of a seller's market in many instances. So if I'm an automobile company, I might be anticipating advertising buys a year ahead of time compared to other industries like television, where I might also have a one-year span to make a decision about what ad buys am I going to go out. There is also, for all the growth at the top of the market, if you think about what does the web look like right now, well, the top 50% of web traffic is accounted for by the top 16,000 domains. So that may seem like a lot of domains, but if you think about the millions of domains that are out there, it's actually a very small percent. Yahoo itself accounts for roughly 12% of all that traffic. So we've got a lot of concentration at the top, but that doesn't mean that the growth in the industry is just tapping at that top. What you see is that there's a very long tail. What about the other millions of websites out there? Well, Google has been very effective at placing advertisements in websites that might only have dozens or hundreds of people that come. They use contextual advertising to do that, and they are now able to generate substantial revenue from that bottom portion of the curve in terms of website traffic. So again, it's notable to continue to look at the numbers. The forecast going out to 2012 is that we'll roughly see a doubling in business of online advertising. So it'll be $50 billion. And if you take a look at total media spending, it's $332 million. So this is now going to be 15%. So again, it's going to surpass most of those traditional forms of advertising. Radio and print will be left behind. And what we'll see is that online advertising will be crucial. All right, so what's the next thing to try to think about? Well, the next question is, well, what does this online advertising look like? I showed you a banner ad in 1994, but obviously things have changed a good deal. We've learned a lot about data mining and machine learning. We've brought these techniques in. So we've got lots of statistical and quantitative approaches. And Google has been very talented in applying these techniques and has led the industry. Their main product is Google AdWords. So it's a way of trying to commercialize all that traffic that comes through its site. For all the people that say that they don't pay attention to the advertising, well, you just have to look around you and see that it does have an impact. Companies rely heavily on this. Every company is different, but if we were to take a look at maybe a typical one, maybe 75%, three-quarters of their traffic is just generated by organic traffic, people that remember the website and come back because they've been there before. But that other quarter of traffic is really coming from advertising. Half of it might be coming from affiliate advertising or partnerships, and then the other half, or roughly 15% of advertising or traffic at a website, will be coming from search advertising, paid advertisement. So essentially what we're doing is we're paying at Google, or we're paying the advertiser is paying Google to drive traffic to my website. So again, it's an incredible amount of traffic and money in this world. Google is the de facto leader, but Yahoo is out there. Yahoo has now cut a deal with Google to do advertising. So if Google before had roughly 70% of advertising, it's quite likely that they might end up at 80%, especially with their acquisition of DoubleClick. MSN, Microsoft would still like to be up there. And again, this industry as a whole, you can see that we're still likely to see some big changes. And there's no reason to say that 10 years from now, Google will be the dominant form of advertising out there. I think that there certainly is potential. With mobile devices, contextually aware advertisement will take on new meanings. If I am standing in Fortress and I'm shopping, when I run a search, it could very well be aware of the products that I'm walking in front of, the things that I'm looking at, and my search might look quite different than if I'm walking down the street or I'm sitting on the bus, I'm driving home, or I'm sitting at home searching for a new product. So that leads me to the next step in this talk, which is to focus very narrowly on one specific type of advertising. So I'm assuming everyone's quite familiar with searching on the web. So let's suppose you go to Google and you type in something like large leather jackets. This was my example because I had to choose something that wasn't in the product class of the companies that I was working with. So I type in large leather jacket and what happens? Well, I now get a set of results that come back. And I'll refer to the results that are generated from Google or any search engine. I'll use Google a lot just because they are the number one advertiser, but you can replace Google with search engine in general. These are going to be the organic search results. So again, there are companies that work on trying to optimize where do you fall in these ratings. How can I make sure that my firm is top or going to be in the top page? It turns out people are not very diligent at looking at these organic results. if you are not in the first page, even worse than that, if you're not in the top 10, it's quite likely that people are not going to come and look at your website. 99% of traffic at Google is going to only look at the first page. So again, it's a little disappointing to say that consumers aren't diligently going out and gathering information, but if you think about most of these searches, it's not for my college education, it's not for a huge event, it's I want to go check a score, I want to go get a new piece of information, I want to buy something that might cost $100, something that's fairly small. All right, so the other thing that I want to point your attention to are the sponsored links. So these are the paid links. This is where Google is making its money. And like I said, it's not necessarily going to be the case that everyone will click on these links. In fact, if you take a look at user behavior, only half of the people will click on the links, the sponsored links. So clearly there are some people that have an aversion to these, and there are all types of issues about trust and signaling. But what I think is interesting is that it's the other half of the people that are looking at them that for them sometimes they signal higher quality, better searches or better results than the ones over on the left. What I'm really interested in is how do we figure out whether we should advertise, buy an advertisement for large leather jackets or not. Most advertising decisions are made by traffic. I want to advertise towards males in the range of 18 to 35 that make more than 250,000, that live in this specific area, that own these specific types of products. They're always based on demographics. But now what's really unique is that I can do it based upon elicited information, volunteered information. I'm looking for this product. And I might also be able to tie it in with some of the other things that the person has done in the past. All right. So the next thing that should happen is that people will come along and they will click on something. So maybe it's big leather jacket down here from King Size Direct. And then they will go ahead and they will click. So this is what I mean by a paid click. The advertiser, King Size, only paid Google when someone clicked on that link. The mere presence of the ad did not cost them anything. But they do pay for that click, and it could be very expensive. In fact, it could go anywhere from a few cents up to hundreds of dollars. The most expensive advertisements are ones placed by lawyers for lung cancer, a very special form of lung cancer related to asbestos exposure. At this point in the asbestos industry, it's fairly well regulated, and it's pretty well known that if I have asbestos, I know where it comes from, and I can go back and I can file a claim, and it will result in hundreds of thousands of dollars in revenues, and lawyers know, well, look, we're going to get a certain percentage of that. So they might very well be willing to pay a couple hundred dollars because they know that there are only three or four other lawyers that this person may be talking to. So how much would you pay for a $50,000 payment? That's what our goal is, to focus on these paid advertisements and to focus on what is the price that we should be willing to pay. All right, so how does search advertising work? Advertisers go out and they decide either directly or with the assistance of another company, a search engine marketing company. Performance is one of them. There are dozens, actually hundreds of companies that do this, that will aid them and say, these are the keywords that you should buy, and then this is how much we would suggest that you would bid for them. So then when a user types a search for, say, Jay Leno in Google, an automatic auction will take place. And again, this is one of the innovations that Google had, that it's not a set price. It's not one person that gets that keyword, but it's a whole set of companies that can advertise. So an auction takes place. Google holds this auction, and one of the things that irritates advertisers is they don't really know what the price of that auction is going to be until it closes. So they essentially have to offer a range of bids. They won't go beyond this point. So they might say, this is my minimum bid, my maximum bid, and they don't really know until the person comes or until Google tells them. All right, so what's going on behind the scenes is actually fairly complex. It's not critical from my research standpoint. What's most important is I'm thinking about what keyword should I bid upon. But Google is going to go back and not only hold an auction, but they're also going to assess the quality of my advertisement. So the quality depends upon the keyword's click-through rate, what's the relevance of the ad text, what's the historical keyword performance, and other factors. So there's actually a lot of things that Google is doing in assessing how much are you going to pay for this advertisement. My bid also is going to decide where I fall in the rankings, but again, it's also affected by my quality score. So I may not have the highest bid, but I could be at the top of the list because I have the highest quality relative to the other people that are advertising. So we've got this auction that's running, and we don't have just one auction. Every keyword has a separate auction that's running. There are different types of bids that I could put in. I could say I want this exact phrase, or I could just say I want partial matches, or I just want a general match. Google will decide whether this is close or not. All right. I can also set a daily budget to make sure that I don't exhaust all my advertising in the course of an hour. Because again, if you're not careful, if you bid on something like cars, you could easily get millions of people that could come to your website in just the course of a few hours. So Google has set up all kinds of devices to aid people. This is an example of the AdWords console. So let's suppose you decide that you want to go back and advertise. You would go to Google, you open up an account, you could put a credit card in, you could deposit money with Google, and you're off. And you now can go back and start editing what's the keyword list that you're interested in. So in this case, I've got contextual advertising, I've got CPA advertising, cost per action advertising, and I put a bid in. I define how much I'm willing to pay, what's the range, the min, the max, what's my budget that I'm willing, and Google will start driving traffic to my site. All right, so there are a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes that it's proprietary, something that we don't really know what the quality is. In fact, we don't even know how the organic search works. How do I know whether I'm going to be at the top of the search results or not? We have a rough idea, but Google is constantly changing these things because they know that if people anticipate how to get to the top, well, then they might start changing their website design just to try to drive traffic to their site. But there's a lot of language that's also built up about advertising. I don't want to burden you with these terms, but there are a couple that are going to be especially important. So we've got CTR, which is going to be click-through rate. We've got cost per click, which is going to be CPC. So how much is going to be how much am I going to have to pay as an advertiser if someone clicks on one of these advertisements? I've got conversion rates, which is the percentage of people that after they click will actually go back and buy something. So between the cost per click and the conversion rate, it defines how much am I going to have to spend to get a customer. So if I've got a cost per click of $1, and I have a conversion rate of 1%, or 1 out of 100 people that actually clicked on my ad, that come to my website, make a purchase, then that means effectively I'm paying $100 for each customer that's coming to my website. So it's actually fairly straightforward and easy, but that defines my break-even. So if I don't make $100 off of that customer, then I'm going to lose money. I could make that up in one purchase, so perhaps they're buying something expensive, or maybe it could take me weeks or months or even years to earn this money back. There are other models out there for advertising. There are also contextual advertisements. So contextual advertisements mean that I start a blog, I go to Google, I sign up, and I tell Google I'd like to start putting AdSense or words in advertisements. So Google will pay me for people that click on these ads, which creates some problems, because what might happen is I create my blog and I start clicking on the ads myself, and I could build up quite a bit of money, or even worse, I have someone in Russia that writes a computer program that automatically clicks on these things as well. So again, there are problems with this, but the idea is that Google scans the page, they look at the words, they figure out what is the topic, and they go back and choose advertisements that would be appropriate. So I'm not going to talk a lot about contextual ads, so I'll just skip over that. But my main goal right now is to focus on predicting purchase conversion rates. So if I have this ad and I know that it's going to cost me $1, the big question is, am I going to get 1% of the people that click on this to buy? Or is it going to be a tenth of a percent? Or is it going to be 50%? Because this is really going to define whether how much I'm willing to pay for that advertisement. There are really several different advertisement decisions that I could make. Which keywords to target, which landing page, what text that I should put in my advertisements. But they're all going to lead to this decision of how much should I bid. Now, I've covered quite a bit, so let me just pause and make sure that everyone is familiar with sort of the basics of the industry. If anyone has questions, this would be a good point to clarify. Okay. So the next step is to think about what's a model that I could use to decide what the conversion rates are going to be. Well, the naive, or I don't mean naive in the sense that it's a bad thing. I just mean naive in the sense that it's fairly simplistic. We could just sit down and start writing out, well, I think these are the keywords that people would likely use to come to my website. So if I am selling leather jackets, I bid for the obvious. I say, well, people might come to my website when they type in leather jackets. But I might be selling special types of leather jackets. Maybe I specialize in big size men leather jackets, or maybe I have leather jackets for motorcyclists, or maybe I have leather jackets with studs and diamonds. Is it the color? Is it black leather jackets? It may not seem important, but what you'll find is that the cost that you pay for leather jackets is much higher than the cost that you pay for black leather jackets. So I could enumerate all the colors, black leather jackets, brown leather jackets, red leather jackets, and white leather jackets, and I'm probably going to pay a lot less for those keywords than leather jackets. So why don't I do that? Why can't I do that? Well, the big problem you run into is just you're going to generate potentially tens of thousands of keywords. And now it's going to be too difficult for a human to sort of follow along with these things. You're going to have a computer that's going to focus on picking out which keywords have been successful and which ones haven't. You can look at competitors. You could also go back and ask Google. Google has a recommendation service itself to tell you these are some keywords that you might want to look at. But the way that Google suggests keywords is it scans through the logs at Google and finds, well, what are some of the other keywords that people have used when they've clicked on sites that are like yours, or they've looked for products that are similar to yours. The thing that we have to watch out for is a lot of responses have very, or a lot of keywords have very sparse responses. So I decide that I'm going to advertise on embroidered Harley jacket with diamonds. Now, you just have to sort of imagine the kind of person that would wear this jacket. But you also have to take into account that this would be a really expensive jacket and I would make a huge amount of money off this person. However, there might be only 5 or 10 people that would ever have a search that would match up with these keywords. Is it worth it for me to bid on this specific phrase? Well, if I go back and look at the way of many of these naive techniques work, is that they bid, they look, and after the course of 1 week, they see that we've gotten 2 hits, and none of those 2 clicks have generated any purchases, so they estimate the conversion rate is 0 out of 2. But 2 is a really small sample size. So you really need to have at least 30 or 50 or a couple hundred people that would be exposed to an advertisement before you could reliably predict whether this is going to convert or not. However, the simple technique doesn't work that way. So we're going to miss out on a lot of opportunities. And I think what will happen is it sort of drives us towards very narrow sets of phrases that we're bidding on. The other thing that I find is that there are a lot of misspellings. So many people can't spell well anyways. That's okay because Google often corrects your spelling. But I might go back and type in leather jacket and notice my spelling here. I drop off the A. So I type in L-E-T-H-E-R. I misspelled it. I come up. But it turns out that to bid on this phrase, it cost me 10 times less than it cost me to bid on the phrase leather jacket. If I get similar conversion rate from the people that can't spell to the people that can spell, again, potentially, there's a lot of keywords out there that I could be bidding on that I could make much more money off of because they cost me less if they yield similar conversion rates. So the main problem we get is experimentation is expensive. If I go back and bid on 10,000 keywords, and each of those keywords is generating a substantial amount of traffic, I could burn tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars before I figured out, well, what is the price that I should be bidding on advertisements? All right, so here's an example. Again, this is for massage. If you go to Google, you type in massage, and you click on one of those links, that will cost the person $5 that you're clicking on. If you type in Lomi Lomi massage, it only costs 20 cents to the person that's going to click. If I type in traditional Hawaiian massage, it only costs me 5 cents per click. So this is what I'm calling the long-tailed effect. So if you look at these, traditional Hawaiian massage might actually be much better to bid on because it might have a very similar conversion rate as regular massage. I don't know. Again, I'm an empiricist, which means I go back, I look, and we see what are people doing. So what we have to do is we have to come up with an automated way of trying to generate keywords. So if we're not going to follow the naive approach. So we could ask Google, which will look at past queries, and it'll try to give me suggestions from the past queries. There are proximity methods, which is the predominant method that most search engine optimizers are using, which is that they query a search engine for a seed keyword, and then they look and see what other phrases are coming up. There's Word Tracker, which goes and looks at meta tags, and it will spider lots of websites that might be similar to mine to figure out what are the tags that are on the page. There's TermsNet, which exploits some kind of semantic relationships. So it figures out that jackets and coats are quite similar to one another. So if I'm interested in bidding on leather jackets, why not also bid on leather coats? There's another one, Wordy, and this goes back and it looks for relevant keywords that might be cheaper. And it's similar to trying to exploit the semantic relationships. Again, it searches Google. It looks at the search results that are coming back. It looks for words that might be similar, and it starts augmenting its database. The main problem that I've got is all these just generate keywords. They don't tell me what the conversion rate is going to be. My problem is to try to figure out if someone types in this phrase, how many people are going to go back and buy? Let's suppose that I have some experience. Either I'm a search engine company, so I have some idea of how many people are searching this phrase and clicking, or I have some experience with a retailer that leather coats tends to generate about a 2% conversion rate. So if someone clicks on leather coats, about 2% or 2 in 100 people that clicked on it will go back and make a purchase. So what about these other searches? What if I search for coats or Gap leather coat or Black Izod lambskin leather or wilsonsleather.com? What do you think the conversion rate would be? Is it going to be higher or lower than my 2% average? So what we're going to do in the first technique, and I've got two techniques to show you, is the first one is I have an expert that goes back and evaluates each of the keywords. So my expert essentially looks at the string and they decide each of these words fit into different types of categories. After they figure out the categories, I build a logistic regression model that relates these categories of the keywords to a conversion rate. And again, I can set this up in a hierarchical model, so there could be lots of websites that could be quite similar to one another times. But let's just focus again on an example to try to illustrate what I'm doing. I've got large Wilson's leather jacket, and this is the phrase that the consumer types in. I have my expert who sits down and says, well, large is a size, and whenever you see a size, it increases the chance of conversion by 10% over the baseline, over just leather coats. Wilson, well, that's a brand name. Brand names are great. They tend to increase conversion by about 50%. The two best phrases, if you're thinking about your website, tend to be brand names, and they also tend to be your own website. For some reason, people go back to find your website. They type in leathercoats.com or something like that at Google, and that could also be a good keyword for you to bid on. Anyways, what we've got is this large Wilson's leather jacket. I go through my algorithm and I score this, and I now come up with this predicted conversion rate of 2%. So let's suppose the base conversion rate of leather jacket is going to be 1%. Well, the advantage of this approach is that it actually works fairly well. It's fairly robust to a different website. It generates good forecast for infrequent words. The main reason that I want to use this is that I have a lot of searches where I might only have 10, 50, 100 people that are searching. Once I get 1,000 people that have searched, I can tell you that black leather jackets has a 3% conversion rate, and I can be fairly certain of what that percentage is going to be. So the main reason that we want this approach is that there are some very infrequent things. The disadvantage is that I have to have an expert that goes back and evaluates. It can be slow, it can be costly, and I may not know exactly how to categorize all the words. The second approach that I'm going to lay out is a machine learning approach, or a data mining approach. What I'm going to do is I am going to take my search strings and I am going to expand them out. How do I expand them? Well, I use what's called a bag of words model. I am going to go back to Google or a search engine. I'm going to ask, what are all the other pages that would come up, or say the top 100 pages that would come up with this particular phrase for this particular search word? I then have lots of information about words that might be related to the phrase, and that allows me to go back and try to compare search phrases. I can try to figure out, is this search phrase similar or not similar? So again, let me give you an example. So I extract words frequently associated with large Wilson's leather jacket using a search engine. So I go back, I search at Google for large Wilson's leather jacket, I find the top 100 websites, I go back to each of those websites, I recover what are the words that occur on those pages. And I build up a vocabulary. In this case, I find out that for these top 100 matches, these are the kinds of words that pop up frequently. Leather, jacket, Wilson's, outerwear, distressed, black, handbags, men, women, apparel, medium price. What's good is that now I have a fairly extensive knowledge about what that search phrase looks like, and I can go back and I can compare that with other phrases. So in this case, I've got large leather jacket. So large leather jacket has a vocabulary that looks like this. Leather, jacket, clothing style, fashion, coats, men, women, classy, comfortable prices, discounted parkas, luggage. And I can compare this set of words with this set of words, and I can see, well, what's the overlap? Are they similar? If they're similar, then my guess is that the conversion rate for a large Wilson's leather jacket will be similar to large leather jacket. That's the essence of the idea. We just look and see what are the things that are associated with one phrase and see if they're also associated with the other. The complex part of it is that there's an algorithm behind this that tries to figure out mathematically what's the similarity between these words. There's also a lot of words. The vocabularies could be tens of thousands of words. So I've got to figure out ways of trying to reduce down the dimensionality. So I might use techniques like factor analysis to do that. But the good thing is now I could do in a fairly automated fashion, I could enumerate hundreds, thousands of keyword searches, and I could find things like large Wilson's leather jacket. It's quite similar to Wilson's leather jacket. It's much better to bid on large Wilson's leather jacket than bid on big red leather jacket. All right, so that's it. The advantage of this approach is that it's automated. It doesn't require a human expert that's going to categorize the findings. It can be replicated over a large number of sites. It yields very similar accuracy to our expert. In some cases, it might be a little better. This is where I'm still working on things to try to get it to make sure that it's always better than our human, but sometimes people are pretty smart when they're looking at these. The disadvantage is it's complex. It's computationally intensive. The statistical properties aren't always well known. And I'm really not exploiting natural language. But I don't know that search terms are natural language, right? Is large leather jacket a phrase? Is this an appropriate English term or not? So it seems to have its own syntax. So I'd just like to show you a quick application. So this is data from a real website. This website had approximately 15,000 purchases over the time period that I was looking. Roughly, they're bidding on 3,000 keywords. And there are approximately 5 purchases per keyword, but they're highly skewed. So you can see that the top, 5, 10 keywords are generating traffic in orders of 60, 70 people that'll click on this. So in my example, that might be the leather jackets. But then there are a lot of other keywords out here on the right. In fact, the modal response is 0. 0 people click on this. But you can also see that there are a number that have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people that click on this advertisement. And for those infrequent ones, I have difficulty knowing, is it just that they weren't out there long enough, or is it that they're just bad keywords and I should drop them? So again, this is the skew that I was talking about. The top 10 keywords attract 72% of the sales. 71% of the keywords don't generate any sales at all. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to compare to see my expert in machine learning approach. Am I doing a good job at predicting whether they're going to generate conversions or not generate conversions? And in this case, what I find is that the overall accuracy for my expert approach is 73%. So again, that means that if I go back and have a conversion rate of about 2%, then I am going to be close to that 2%. In this case, I'll be roughly within 1 to 3%, the range that I'm effectively looking at. And if I compare this either for the expert or machine learning approach, I'm actually doing quite well. As I said, there are more results I wish I could share, but I haven't gotten authorization yet, so eventually there will be a paper that gets published and it will enter public domain. But what I'd like to do is just briefly review, which I think search advertising is a really interesting problem. Right now it's driving a lot of traffic on the web. It's probably driving a lot of traffic to your websites, or you're using search advertising to find websites that you want to look at. Right now, most of the science has focused on designing searches, designing better websites, and we haven't thought much about that advertising problem. So what I've done is shown one of the first applications to try to forecast what conversion rate's going to look like. I think this is an interesting thing. It brings together a lot of different fields, marketing, advertising, computer science, information retrieval, machine learning, statistics. They all come together in this type of application. So I think the interesting things is that right now I've just sort of started to scratch the surface. Some of the interesting problems that come out of this is that you find that you've got more than just one phrase. Sometimes people have a series of things that they search for. So think about this. I start looking for a car. So I sit down, the very first keyword I type in is car or auto. I get cars.com. I start figuring out what kind of car I want. So then I realize I want a sports car. So then I go back to Google, I type in sports car. Then after I search for sports car, I realize I now want a two-seater. I want a convertible sports car. So I go back to Google, I start typing in convertible sports car. I spend lots of time looking at different ones. I decide, should it be the Z4 or the Boxster? Eventually, I decide that I want the Boxster, so my phrase has changed from convertible sports car to Boxster. It's actually shorter, but now I know exactly what it is that I want. So I think one of the things is that there's this evolution, and again, that's not being picked up. We have lots of other problems about what landing pages or how do people find things. It's just an extensive set. But I don't want to go over time, so I'll stop here and just ask and see if you have some comments that you'd like to ask, questions.